Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. Here District, I'm the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, my son Chris Johnson, my first mate. We're on this fantastic voyage, and we are the only father and son combinations in the history of college basketball to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA. What's up, Chris? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, MJ.
Okay, now where can people kind of find us out there in the universe of the metaverse or whatever it's called, whatever this thing is out there we're in?
Well, we're on the fantastic voyage, and folks can join us by following us at Bucks Plus Audio across social media or subscribing to the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also show us some love on YouTube. Leave us a like on this episode, comment, talk about it, share with your friends. We live on the official Bucks YouTube channel.
That's where you find us. And we got a great show. Going to talk all things Bucks, early part of the season still. Latter segment, going to have Dan Devine, Yahoo Sports writer. And I don't know, man, what's going on out there in the basketball world? Your impressions about this early part of the season? Anything you want to get off your chest at this point?
The way the referees have officiated Giannis in the last couple of games, man, has been absolutely dismal. It's been bull crap. I think I've been Mitchell Irvin is on my public enemy number one list. I'm serious, man, because it's not cool. So there's one thing to officiate a guy and, okay, you're going to let some things go. It's gone too far.
A couple of things. I think he needs to drop the thank you at the end of the challenge statements that he makes.
Get his whole spiel.
Thank you. The Bucks is a challenge. There was no foul on the play. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Mitch. But then he was also making some calls, man, from just the baseline that he couldn't
see
what was going
on. You said it on the air. It's like, how is he making that call?
Brother, how you see it? But you got X-ray vision. How are you seeing through all these bodies to make these? Yeah, so I definitely had some issues with some of the, and then the way Giannis has been treated, man, and I don't think we're making too much of it, but like when Russell Westbrook, LA guy, Jesse Owens, Sportsman's Parks, where he grew up, played for Reggie Morris Jr., a guy's dad that I played against, was one of my idols. We got history. But for him to take Giannis, wrap him up, which I had no problem with, but then to kind of steer him into the basket support, and it wasn't like brutal. Giannis didn't risk injury or nothing, but it was some unsportsman.
That's a flagrant in today's NBA. That's a flagrant foul.
There's no flagrant. That was a normal foul. And that was Mitchell Irvin and his crew. No wind up, no this, no that. And then against the Pacers, when Nesmith takes him out of the air, that could have been a flagrant too. They did upgrade it to a flagrant, but then I love the fact that Giannis came back and dunked on, I think, Jarrett Walker, man. And he Giannis had me speaking in tongues, man. He was he was so brutal on that play, man.
That was pretty funny. Your tongue, your I don't think people understood. A lot of people were saying caveman. So they were getting confused on what you actually did. So the non-religious folks, they were like, yo, he's speaking in caveman. But I heard it. And I'm like, I know exactly. I heard that when I was like 6 years old at Mount Moriah Baptist Church. You know what I'm saying? It's the tongues, bro. People don't know what's up with these tongues, bro.
Ain't been in enough Pentecostal churches over the years, man.
Siakam defending. Giannis blows past.
You're number one, babe. Lefty. Finish. Giannis.
Oh.
Wow,
yeah.
That was dope. Dylan hooked it up.
Yeah, what was all that stuff on the...
So those were people commenting on what you said. So... people are, what did he just say? And, oh, man, watching this guy, people, LMAO, I love Marcus Johnson. You know, a lot of people were showing you love after this moment. It was an awesome moment that went viral.
Yeah. And, I just got caught up in the moment. And, I've said some things over the years with Steve Fizdiak. I used to go, yaka, yaka. And that was something that you used to do, when you, like, get on a heater and knock down shot after shot, yakum, yakum. And we're just a family of sound effects. Josiah, myself, you, Josh, we're just so into basketball sound effects. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so when that happened,
And I talked about Giannis poking the bear and how he was going to start dunking on people. And Jairus Walker, take a number. You're a number one. And then when he threw it down on him, that's why I got really excited about turning to like, you know.
Now, let me ask you about this. On the game-winning call, you gave us the nice. What were your other kind of options that you kind of – because I knew – it sounded like you wanted to give us something else, but obviously you were kind of in the mix, in the flow, and kind of chilling, trying to chill, not trying to take over the moment. Talk about that moment and what led up to the nice call, the jumper.
Well, you know, I'm good for that. The yeah, baby. Yeah, you know, I'm good for just kind of really, really, you know, jumping in. It's funny. I was watching Giannis knock down the game winner against the Knicks in 2017, like 8 years ago, Madison Square Garden, Gus Johnson on the call. And, yeah. It's not scripted. It's just like whatever the emotions are calling for. And yeah, but again, with us, it's like bottoms, you know, it's all that kind of verbiage that we've come up with over the years that connotes that the guys hit a big shot, you know, bottom, face, whatever, game time, you know, all that good stuff. And so it was a great, great moment just because of first it was Giannis and then doing something that he gets, you know, I won't say criticized, but questioned about a lot just in terms of that lack of a consistent jump shot. So for him to win a game, and Doc made a great comment, Chris, and that's when Giannis and the thing that stood out to me was that was a similar type situation in game five in the playoffs. When he was on the left block coming down, I think in the regulation, game is tied, fade away, right shoulder, and misses that shot. This time, as Doc talked about, when he gets a piece of the paint, he's a totally different shooter. He got a piece of the paint against Neesmith and then the fade. And I think, and look, let me say this. You, people don't know this about you. So when we were in Italy back in 1989, 1990, you're playing for the Fantoni Udine. You're like, what, 14? You're playing for the 18-year-old team. And so I'm watching the game and the clock is winding down. We were down one or whatever. You hit like a 20-footer to win the game. You may not remember this. Your teammates surround you. Chris. They surround you. This is in Italy. But that was your first time knocking down a game winner.
Yeah.
And my thing is this, is that once you start getting used to having that mindset, you know, my daughter, your sister Shiloh hit a game winner, just a fall league game. But it was good to see because it just registered with me. Once you start developing that mindset of knocking down those game winners, I was kidding with Lisa, I wasn't kidding. It was actually true. My first game winner attempt as a pro was against the New York Knicks, my rookie year, tie ball game.
Who's guarding? Pull up
Bob McAdoo. Guard me. I pull up from about 17 and I thought it was all net. I kind of fall back and fall down and I look up and it's like an air ball. and that kind of got me on that trajectory of being a little reluctant. I'm not a great shooter anyway. You know, just shoot that air ball. So my point is, I mean, you know about the game winners. You had your first finger roll. You sent Crenshaw to the state championship game against Modern Day. Your first 3-point shot was down in Tribeco Hills, you know, to send that game into overtime. First time you shot a three. First finger roll you ever shot. You know, went at that sports arena, 18,000 people, sent them to the state championship game, Crenshaw High School. And so you've got that in your DNA. You know, and so with Giannis, talk to me. What do you think that's going to do for him in these kind of situations?
No, I think, but to Doc's point about this sort of like, what's the movie where Kevin Costner used to pitch? He was a pitcher, but he had this mechanism in his mind that helped him pitch. I don't remember it, but that's what Giannis getting a piece of the paint. That's what game winners do. When Giannis got a piece of the paint, it kind of clicked this mechanism of comfort, of at peace with myself on this shot versus if he didn't get a piece of the paint. It's like you go into a familiar territory, MJ, and then everything starts to get easier because you have a level of comfort in your hands, your arms, your body, your feel, just how he turned. Like Cole Anthony said, like how ridiculous that shot was because of the way he went into the lane and then spun all the way back. Like, yeah, that was incredible. I do think this is going to lead to a lot more confident play from Giannis, the ability to knock down shots. But another thing I wanted to kind of add on top of that, not just the game winner, but them Giannis's 3-point ability, Giannis's ability to knock down shots on a high level, easy. Like, we need this 3 to bring us within 2, or you know, this dude has been hitting all bottoms. Like, yeah, he's not hitting a rim. This ain't no rumble in 3. He ain't banking nothing in. It ain't going up. And then it is bottoms when he lets it go. He's doing the set shot 3, which tells me he got serious confidence in his base, in his form, and who he is as a shooter right now. So for me, like you talked about earlier about wanting to see Giannis shoot more 3s. I didn't know before the season, I'll be honest, because I asked you months ago about, do you want to see Giannis take more 3s? You were like, you know, I wouldn't mind. I was kind of like, you know, he was taking these 3s last year. That was pissing me off. But now that I see he's found a mechanism, right? He's found a mechanism in how to make shots. And shooting is mechanism. It's base, it's body, it's feet, it's your legs, it's how you do things. He's found it and he's got it locked in.
Well, to your point, and it starts, you know, you chronologically spelled it out. You said base. His base, Chris. And I've been noticing this, you know, I study all these guys in their pregame shoots, and I send you video on certain guys, and we'll talk about the, you know, their form and what they're doing with their feet. But Giannis's feet, he's got a wider base, Chris. He's got a much wider, so better balance, better, you know, better energy distribution on the lift up. I mean,
that's what I'm talking about.
It jumped out at me. I was watching him like a couple of games ago, just before the game, just take some long 3s, and his base was so wide and sturdy and sound. And it just, I mean, it does so much for your confidence as a shooter. And that's where it starts, man. It starts with the base, right?
Yes, it does. The base in your feet, and then it's the reps. It's like what you talked about when you said that Drew Hanlon, when he worked with Giannis, it wasn't so much trying to tinker and change things. It was about getting shots up. It was about getting reps up. And so when you get a lot of reps up on your own as a hooper, you start to develop your own personal mechanisms that no one needs to teach you, because you're seeing your shots go in a certain way. So if you're shooting 500 shots, you know that if I do this, that 300 of these are going in. And so for me, it's trial and error. It's like Giannis spent a lot of time in the lab just kind of stripping down his process, stripping down his shot, and figuring out what works for him. He's found it. It's locked in. I got to find that movie that Kevin Costner starred in where he was the pitcher. He would talk about it. He would do it in his head. Every time he'd throw a pitch, he'd have like this thing that would click in, right? And it would help him throw. And I think that Giannis has found that same level of click in, of lock in on his jumper.
We got Dylan looking up. What's that movie, Dylan?
Is it Bull Durham?
No.
For the Game?
Love of the Game.
For the Love of the Game.
Yeah, that wasn't Bull Durham.
Bull Durham, that's our stuff. We would know that.
Ron Shelton, Susan Sarandon, Tim Robbins. That's a classic for those who like good baseball fare. But yeah, but go ahead. You got some, Chris?
No, that's all I would say. I just feel like Giannis has found that mechanism, and he's totally locked in his jumper right now.
Yeah. And he started out the season, I think he was like 6 for 10 from the 3-point. Like I said, the only thing, and I was looking up some numbers, before Toronto. He didn't take his 10th 3-pointer until about the 13th or 14th game, something like that of last year. He's already up to 10 after about, you know, 6-7 games in so far this season. So, and I want to see that volume increase, and that will increase with the game confidence, and then knocking down a game winner, you know, about a 17, 18 foot right shoulder turn fadeaway in that situation, man.
How do you feel, MJ, how do you feel about the way Docs has managed Giannis's minutes this season so far?
It's interesting, man, that you asked that. And because I've always been one to think that he could play more. This is like the fewest minutes, 32 minutes plus a game right now, the fewest minutes he's played in about three or four years, I think 21, 22, somewhere in there, Coach Budenholzer.
Yeah.
And Bud reached out to me the other day, Chris, just to say hello and somebody think some good things about me, and he just wanted to tell me he appreciated all the good stuff that we experienced when he's with the Bucks. I love Bud, but anyway, so Bud had played him a really low amount of minutes, Giannis and Chris, because the Bucks were beating everybody they had the biggest point differential in the league that year, winning 60 plus games, blowing people out, and so their minutes were down to like 32 a game, which I thought would be an issue once the playoffs started, because now you got to get those minutes go up to about 38, 39. I think it's okay. I think right now, coming off the Eurobasket experience, that was just completed and went September.
Yep.
Less than a month or so before training camp. I think Doc has the option now to increase that slowly, but don't just, force feed him a lot of minutes right off the bat. So I don't mind it right now. And then you look at Giannis's efficiency in 33, 34 points a game in 32 minutes? Jesus Christ.
But the MJ, over 40 on the player efficiency rating also. So what we're seeing, and the coach at Memphis kind of got into it with Ja about this, but because of the shortening of the rotation, of cutting down like that first, instead of pulling Giannis, whatever, 7, 8 minutes, maybe Doc's pulling him at 5. Those 2, 3, 4 minutes matter a ton in today's NBA, in my opinion. The shorter burst where you can get guys more win, more rest, more legs, and then play guys, go deep into the roster, is going to be more advantageous for you during the course of over the long haul of the game and of the season, in my opinion. Giannis is going to be fresher when it really counts. I think that the possibility, or I don't know if the word is propensity, to be injured will lessen greatly as Doc adheres to this strict minutes restriction. I love it. I want to see more of it. Play this dude less and less, because guess what? You're able, I think he played too many minutes yesterday, in my opinion. Once you figured out that Toronto was on that run, you kind of saw the ebbs and flows of the rhythm of the game. And I know Giannis probably wanted to play, and Scottie Barnes is out there, and there's some stuff out there for him to be out there for. Scottie's been trying to do some things with Giannis, so I know he wanted to be on the court and try to bring them back. But yesterday I'm watching, it's like, yo, let this guy chill, man. Prep on for Friday. Less is more with Giannis. You can play this guy 25, 26 minutes. He's still going to give you 30. And so I'll be interested to kind of monitor that, how Doc continues to manage those minutes.
Well, and it's funny how we think alike, because when I'm watching the game courtside, I'm looking, especially at the end of the third quarter, second units on the floor, Giannis is out. Fourth quarter starts. I'm always kind of wondering just at what point Doc's going to put Giannis in. Now, and then I look at the monitor, the stat monitor, and see that he's got 25 minutes. And so now we get to the 7-minute mark. Now he's about to play his 32 minutes. But Doc leaves him out for a longer stretch in that fourth quarter, as opposed to putting him in, at the 10-minute mark. He puts him in at the 7-minute mark. And then Giannis is finishing a lot stronger. You know what I mean? He's just finishing so much more stronger down the stretch because of that additional rest that he's getting at this point. So it's just a really, really interesting thing to see how that's playing out. And then the pace of the game has increased this year. The tempo's faster. The numbers bear it out. I think Miami or somebody leads the league in pace, 106 possessions per 48 minutes, which is just crazy. It'll probably go down, but the Bucks are at like 102, and that would have been fourth last year. Now it's like 12th or 13th. So everybody's playing a lot faster, and that taxes your body even more.
No question about it. But I also think, MJ, it's, we do got to give the Bucks props for the stylistic changes that they have undergone from last year to this year. Let's talk about what you're talking about. 12th in 3-point attempts per game this year, 39.4 versus 18th per game last year at the same time, right? 36.6. 13th in assists per game at 26.7. Last year, 21st, 25.5. The Bucks are 20th in opponent turnovers per game at 13.9 versus 26th last year, 12.7. And finally, the Bucks are 11th in pace at 102.6 versus last year, 99.3. This is without, your lead guard, Kevin Porter Jr. This is with guys kind of being hurt. This is with Miles Turner sort of, adjusting and making the transition. This is seven games into the season. We're seeing major return on investment and dividends in this, in the Bucks' commitment to this new style of play. Doc Rivers, I've seen some well-respected NBA people talk about the coaching job, the management job that Doc has done with this roster in this early season. It has shocked people. People are shocked. Because guess what? Hey, let's talk about it. People came in all summer, and look, I'm not, there's no resting on laurels. This isn't like we did anything. But there was this concept that the Bucks were going to start 2-8 like they started last season. And you and I sat here for months, very high on this roster, very high on the Bucks coming into the modern NBA with the roster construction, the type of players, the archetype of guys, the contributions that Cole Anthony would have been able to make because of, you know, what he was doing in Orlando didn't make sense with Paolo and Franz Wagner. And now he's got two different bigs. And so he's going to be unleashed. Like, all this stuff is playing out. Now, it's going to be up to Doc to figure out these defensive woes. Because on the defensive side, MJ, as we see, it's a problem. It's starting to become problematic, in my opinion. I mean, against a younger team, I'm starting to kind of see this young thing kind of starting to come up. It's like, okay, how do we figure this out?
And so that leads me to point of attack issues that I have with the way the game is called. You've legislated the physicality out of the point of attack. And it's just so difficult to keep these quick guards or even medium quick guards from getting into the paint. And everybody wants to get into the paint, spread out for the three paint balls, I call them, but spread out to that 3-point shot. So, I mean, Greg Buckner's got his work cut out for him because you got an AJ Green who's, you know, averaging about 4.6 fouls per 36 minutes or something crazy like that. I mean, Cole Anthony averaging over 7 fouls per 36. And a lot of it's just point. You can't touch anybody at the point of attack. Now, that being said, I had a great conversation with one of my favorite basketball people, a savant, Rajon Rondo, who's on the staff of the Milwaukee Bucks. And his thing, Chris, is that in terms of AJ picking up fouls, Rondo's like, look, he's got to absorb the contact. You can't flop back once you get hit and bring attention to the contact. You've got to, you know, buck up, absorb it, and play through it like it's not even there. And so now the officials are watching that, and it's like, I call it like pitch framing in baseball. You kind of fool the officials about how much of contact is going on. And then the other thing Rondo said, Chris, and I want your opinion on this, and not opinion, but just comment on this. But he talked about when he played that he would go to the officials after a couple of questionable calls and say, how should I play it? How should I play this defensively so that I don't get the foul call? And they were like, well, maybe if you don't use as much of an arm, you know, whatever it is. But he's encouraging the Bucks players to have a dialogue with these officials to figure out just kind of, you know, what are you looking for? What are you going to allow me to do tonight? Let's talk about this. And let me know what I can do, and I'll go out there and do it.
It's no different than being in college and going to office hours and talking to a professor or asking your teacher, hey, what do I need to do better? Hey, you're being a teacher's pet. Hey, you're doing the thing that some people may frown upon that. Like, what's this dude doing trying to pander to the refs? But you're getting information, and you're getting information that's going to give you an advantage and help you win. Real quickly, MJ, on the Bucks defense, man, and you love talking about this stuff, so I had to come prepared with the synergy numbers just listening to you on the broadcast. Bucks, 52 possessions of zone freaking defense this season. Teams are shooting 30% from the field. 30%, MJ. So to your point, yes, the Bucks need to be sitting in zone a little bit more than they have. In man defense, they are poor, giving up 47%, 53% on an effective field goal percentage. I'm not saying, hey, become an all-out zone team, but definitely tinker and throw that zone look at folks because it's giving dudes major problems.
Yeah, and I think that might be the next direction that the league, I mean, Houston's playing like 18, 19% of their possessions as in zone. Last year, Miami led the league at about 12%. And Houston's like 20, you know, Udoka's like, hey, you know, I got KD, I got these old heads out here. We go into a zone and that eliminates some of those point of attack kind of, you know, issues.
That's my point, MJ. Yep.
Yeah. So more zone. Now, you're talking about Doc. You know, one thing Doc used to do, Chris, back with the Celtics in 08, And I know this because I use it when I coached the Belizean national team in 2010. He'd have this big to big double screening action with Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Garnett, and they would actually start. He had a thing with them, but they would start at the dotted line together. Rondo would have the ball just crossing half court, and they would lock arms and come up and set that big to big double screen. Doc is starting to use some of those principles with the Bucks, and they're getting good stuff out of it. So our segment about that action, we're going to look at some of these big to big double screens. Now in the NBA, they call them 77s. I don't know what the etymology is behind that. It's because it's seven, maybe looks like two big players coming up setting screens at the same time. I'm not sure what that's about, but here's some of those 77 screens that the Bucks have used where one guy pops, the other rolls, then it's up to the ball handler to kind of pick out the advantage. Let's take a look at the first one. All right, the two bigs. This is Jericho Sims, roller, Bobby Portis, pop.
Let's see that again.
See that again. Now watch the gravity. Three guys go.
But there's a lot of miscommunication as well. You'll see Nance kind of get weird. Watch Nance. He's getting weird right there. Watch Nance get weird when he points. Now watch this. Hurry up and get back to him. You see how Nance is acting on that?
Yeah. So that's the miscommunication that you're trying to create with that kind of maneuver offensively. And so Nance's first thought process is stopping the ball. Here we go again. Double screen. There's Kyle Kuzma, whose cutting ability, Chris, I think has really, really come to the forefront this season. Right there, he kind of slips that. As soon as he detects that his defender is going to step out and pick up the ball, he's gone.
But I think it's also important to watch the body language of defenders on these plays. Watch Scottie Barnes as Kuzma makes it. Watch him shrug his shoulders. This is it. You see that right there? This is indicative of this play causing people major issues, communication problems. You saw Nance get frustrated on it. Now you see Scottie Barnes dropping his shoulders. Like, for some reason, this particular set causes issues for people because you don't know how to play, where to play. You see, Scottie's coming off a screen from Bobby. The communication isn't there. Pirtle isn't talking. Nobody's saying nothing. You know, Pirtle's trying to open. He don't know what he's doing. I mean,
Dylan, can we freeze frame this at any point here? So run it back, and I want to freeze frame it right. Okay, so run it forward a little bit. Freeze right there. Freeze frame it right there. Good. So what happens is there's that point, there's that moment in the action, Chris, and you know this all too well. I'm talking to the people that don't know this, but there's this point in the action where there is a chasm, like a void defensively, where you've got Brandon Ingram stepping out, Scottie Barnes going over the screen, trying to chase the basketball as a helper. Yeah. And then there's that void where the cutting and the timing of the cut have got to be precise.
Yes.
And this is what Kyle Kuzma is really good at reading, just when to go. You go too early, there's not an opening. You go too late, Scottie Barnes is in better defensive position to help. You go at the right time. Look at that gulf that he has going to the basket, and there's nothing you can do about it defensively. That's why it's so frustrating. Go ahead, Dylan. Run it.
Great point, MJ.
All right, then we got one or two more to look at here. Again, big to big screen, and there's Giannis on the cut, and when Giannis cuts and Bobby pops, Giannis is taking how many defenders with him? Giannis is the second guy. Ooh. One, two, three, four. Yeah. You got two guys in the paint. You got two guys pinched in on the key. And that's the kind of spacing that he gets. And then the on-ball defender has a tough time, struggling time kind of getting over that on-ball screen and opens up a great shot for Ryan Rollins.
It's just crazy that there's so much focus on Giannis on this play that this dude, Miles Turner's defender, completely sold. Is that Isaiah Jackson? Yeah. Miles Turner's defender completely sells out, leaves Miles. If Ryan Rollins starts to actually kick the ball instead of always, not always, but he takes too many of these shots, in my opinion. He should be kicking to other guys. You got Turner wide open. You got Gary Trent wide open a lot during the game. He's got to stop taking some of these shots. You know, he needs to get that to the open guy and give an open guy a three-pointer, okay?
Right,
play it.
Right.
Just look how open Miles Turner is. Play it. You see how open Miles Turner is? It's like, dog, Dog, jump in the air and pass it to him. He does that. He does this a lot during the games, man, and it'd be causing us to go through like 8-9 minutes of futility because, you know, he's not hitting that extra dude. But again, growing pains, still early in the season, film study. I think he's going to start making that extra play, you know, in these next 10 to 15 games.
And I've read a lot about Ryan not being a true point guard. Yeah, and you can see some of that in plays like this, just in terms of reading the floor. And not only that, and you talked about it with Scotty Barnes and the shrug defensively. You know how it is as an offensive player. If you're wide open and you're not getting the ball, whether your teammate makes a shot or not, it takes a little something out of you. I mean, just the frustration level. It just, you know, a little piece of you gets disturbed just enough. And that's the whole principle about sharing the basketball, making the right play. Yeah. You make the right play, everybody right stays on one accord, everybody stays happy. We got one more, I think.
I'll give it to he made it. It's a nice shot.
He knocked down the shot.
But I seen him miss a lot of those, MJ.
Yeah.
What they said.
But here's Ryan Rollins right here, going to his right. Was that Cole? That's Cole.
Yeah, that's Cole. That's a real point guard. Not knocking Rollins, but look at the vision already. See, that's periphery. So what you see from Cole Anthony is point guard peripheral vision. Watch this. Off of one bounce, point guard. Wow. That is a crazy play. Let's see that again.
If you freeze it right, freeze it right there. He sees through his periphery. He not only is looking for the guy opening the corner, he sees I got three yellow shirts in my immediate vicinity. The corner is open. And then he's got you've got to be able to master a pass to get it to the corner, that hook pass. That hook pass right there, you know, not everybody can't do that. I mean, you don't fall out of bed being able to make that and execute that pass.
No, you don't. I think once Ryan Rollins starts to pick up some of these type of nuances, these PG nuances, MJ, like you just talked about, Cole recognized it on the catch and then carved out the path that he wanted to carve to make the play that he wanted to make. Once Rollins starts doing that, he's going to jump a whole nother. He's going to make another leap in terms of his game and his vision as a player.
Yeah, and that's all we're saying. We're not knocking Ryan Rollins. It's just
I love Double R. Please,
he's a work in progress. We all love him. He's a work in progress, and to his credit, speaking with Donovan Ham, Rajon Rondo, they spend a lot of time with him. They look at voluminous amounts of film, and you can best believe, man, Rondo, Chris, when he's going through dummy offense for the Bucks in practice, these hook passes, he makes the most beautiful left-handed hook pass from the left break line to the right corner, right in the shooting pocket that you'll ever see. And that's what pure point guard play is all about.
That's Rondo. You're talking about Rajon Rondo, bruh.
All right, look, Chris, there's a new Behind the Bucks series called Locked In, and Monis Khan, our producer, along with Dylan Carter, but he produced this whole thing, edited this whole thing, and voiced over it for him, and just did a masterful job. But one of the things that was talked about that was really intriguing to me was the fact that A.J. Green was discussing leadership and how it's leadership by committee with this basketball team.
I think it's really figuring out how can we all lead in a way that's needed and that will lift the team up. Obviously, Giannis is just the standard he sets, the effort and the work in his preparation every night. Everybody has to follow suit with that because everybody is a little different with it. We need each other for it. Like if I see Giannis and BP and whoever it may be leading, that it makes me want to jump in and lead and bring whatever I can. Knowing the things that I see out there during games and then just communicating that with guys, whether it's in front of the whole team or just, you know, pulling guys aside, working on having a bigger voice, right? And having those interactions that builds trust with the guys you're playing with. You know, I want people to hold me accountable and let me know what I can do better. And so I think for me, just working on doing that with others, it's only going to benefit everybody on the team. That's what makes a special team and that's what makes a good team. And I think we have that with these guys.
For me, leadership is very interesting, especially in a team situation, because leadership doesn't always have to be from the top dog. Everybody on your squad has their own particular status, and somebody that they can lead on the squad. Whether it be AJ who can lead maybe the rookies or the younger guys, or if it's Taurean Prince leading some of the wing position, whether it be, you know, the guys in the forward room, however that looks, when everybody is locked in to their own particular leadership style and taking it upon themselves to live that servant leader type lifestyle on the team, that's how you win a championship. That's how you run deep into the playoffs.
And to your point, so I'm doing the Raptor game, Chris, up in Toronto, and I'm out there watching guys warm up like I love to do. And so there's a guy out there by the name of Garrett Temple. He's not going to play. You know, he's not going to play out of LSU. I did his games in college.
For
his
sure.
father, Collis Temple, integrated the SEC back at LSU back in the early 60s. And so that's his background. But one of the consummate leaders, you know, you talk about a guy being good in the locker room. And to your point, it doesn't have to be the top dog. It's Garrett Temple is a guy that's very rarely going to see the court. Somebody gets hurt, mop up time, whatever it is. But the fact that he can provide that kind of leadership in the locker room with this relatively young Raptor team, that's imperative. So to your point, and that's why, you know, and people can, you know, make fun of it or do whatever, but a guy like Thanasis in terms of what he brings to the table. I mean, the players love having him around because he's got this energy, you know, and leadership is about this positive energy that you have to be willing to pour into guys younger than you. You know what I'm saying? Guys that, and even if you're not playing, you still got the experience of having been there, having been in the league, having played internationally. And so there's a role, to your point. There's a role for everybody to play. And depending how well you play it is going to correlate to how great the chemistry on that particular team is. And that's a big, big thing.
Absolutely.
Milwaukee Bucks, hot start. Everybody thought that they would struggle out the gate. Bucks have looked really, really good right now. Kind of surprised a lot of people. And one of the people that talked about putting the pieces around this Bucks team for success is Dan Devine. We're going to have him join us right after this. Coming right back with Dan Devine. Here, District.
This season, the Bucks are going for it all.
A game winner for the Greek Freak.
Go inside the team's pursuit of a championship on Locked In, the new season of the Behind the Bucks podcast, narrated by Bucks legend Marcus Johnson. Hear from the team stars on why they think they can make history. It's all on Behind the Bucks on the Bucks Plus audio network. Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Available now on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, the new ESPN Wisconsin app, and wherever you get podcasts.
All right, here, District, episode 88. And eight is like my favorite number, and that's why Danilo Gallinari is one of my favorite players in terms of numbers, because of his affinity for eight. Born August 8th, 1988. Anyway, I digress. Listen, we are so thrilled and privileged to have with us Dan Devine, Devine, right? Is that cool? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I don't know why I got into a Devine mindset. Who was that? Was there a football coach? No.
That's right. Well, up in your part of the world there, up in, it was Dan Devine was the coach of the Green Bay Packers.
That's right.
He coached Notre Dame. Famously, the guy who didn't want to put Rudy in the game
in the movie.
When football season comes around, I get a lot of people in my mentions mad at me like I did something. We all got our crosses to bear, right?
Yeah. Well, and so the caretaker in that movie, the black gentleman with the red hair and the freckles, Beasley is his last name, but he was related to Malik Beasley. That's Malik Beasley's grandfather in that movie. So anyway, that's one of our 6 degrees of basketball separation. But Dan, we thank you, man. So let's see. So let's give you your props here. Senior writer for Yahoo Sports for a while now. 9 years, 2009 and 2018, and then 2022 to current. You spent some time with the Ringer, and then you've got some roots in Staten Island. You're based in Brooklyn. What's up with Staten Island, man? Staten Island's always intrigued me because I'm familiar with the boogie down Bronx and Brooklyn and Manhattan, obviously. I dated a girl from Staten Island. She was a little weird back in the late 70s. a little different. Not weird, but a little different, you know. But what's the – Staten Island's got a couple of famous rappers that I know from out of there.
Wu-Tang, right?
Wu-Tang. Okay. And so what's the deal with Staten Island, man?
Yeah, so the primary cultural product of Staten Island is the Wu-Tang Clan. And then the other end of that is like some of the people on Jersey Shore. So the vibe of Staten Island is a lot more the people on Jersey Shore than it is the Wu-Tang Clan, generally speaking. If you get past, basically, once you get past the North Shore of Staten Island up by the ferry, then you get down to the South Shore. It's a lot more of that kind of gym tan laundry type of stuff. I don't know if you can tell by my complaint. Not so tan. So I didn't really vibe super great out there in Staten Island. So that's why I had to make it back across the bridge, across the Verrazano into Brooklyn. But yeah, grew up in Staten Island, live in Brooklyn, and been covering the league for a while. And it's an absolute thrill for me to join you guys today to talk about some Bucks basketball.
And last Staten Island piece, and then it's just coming back to me slowly.
All right.
Forgive me. What was the Pete, the guy who dated the Kanye's girl for a minute?
Pete Davidson.
He had a movie about Staten Island, I believe. That was really kind of semi-autobiographical, but it's really, really, really a great movie. I mean, I remember that. That was kind of one of those underrated things that I watched that I really enjoyed. Anyway, so that's enough about that, man. So let's talk about what you've been talking about, and that is a guy with the Milwaukee Bucks, Ryan Rollins, who has started off strong and is, I won't say taking the league by storm, but nobody really thought that he was going to be in the position that he's in now, mainly because Kevin Porter Jr. was penciled in as the starter. He gets hurt initially with the ankle injury 9-10 minutes into the season, and then Ryan is kind of thrown into the fire, a couple of back-to-back career highs, 25 and a 30-plus point game against Golden State. But what did you see in Ryan Rollins that would inspire you to write about your projections for him this season?
So there's two things about it. One is that my editor said, everybody keeps saying he's Ryan Hollins. We should probably write something that actually explains to people who he is. And that's a good call. He just went for 30 against Steph on national TV. We should explain where this guy came from and what his situation is. So step one is service journalism, right? Actually, who is this guy? If you're searching, you should learn about him. And then number two is, it's a common tale and one that I'm sure you guys have seen up close and personal time and again, you need to be ready when your opportunity comes, right? And this is somebody who, out of Toledo, comes in the second round, goes to Golden State. There weren't really minutes there in the backcourt at that point. There's a lot of established veterans ahead of him in the pecking order. He winds up kind of getting caught in the wash and then moved out to Washington in the Jordan Peele trade there. Jordan Poole trade rather. Sorry, yeah. It's not a get up type situation, get out type situation. So you wind up in Washington, and again, crowded backcourt and a team in transition. Not really many opportunities for him to play there. So it's a couple of years in the league, and he's only played maybe what, like 100, 120 minutes, something like that, over two seasons, working it out in the G League, trying to sort of fit his way into a role. He gets the opportunity when he gets to Milwaukee, and it's like, what do I need to do to stay here? It's one thing to get into the league, staying in. How do I do that? I'm going to do that with my defense, right? You do that, you earn your way into the rotation, you earn your way into a spot. Then when the minutes open up, at the end of last year, obviously the really frightening situation with Damian Lillard and the blood clot before the playoffs, but late in the spring, we need somebody to come in and pick up these minutes at the point. He's not Damian Lillard. He's a different style of player and certainly not on the magnitude of Damian Lillard, but there's an opportunity here. When your opportunity comes, you got to seize it. You got to step into those shots with confidence. You got to defend like your hair's on fire. And I think you saw that at the end of last season from Ryan Rollins, and you're saying to yourself, I don't know exactly what that guy is in the league, but there's a spot for that guy in the league. And he just keeps putting in, those investments into my game so that when I get a bigger role, a bigger opportunity, I'm ready for that. And then to see that sort of blow up at the beginning of the season, he was already going to be getting rotation minutes. But then, as you mentioned, the Kevin Porter Jr. ankle injury, it's you are starting, you are on the ball, and you need to be the primary north-south creator off of Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's a big job, man. That's not something that everybody else can step into as comfortably. And so for him to take off the way he has, I think it kind of changes the way a lot of people think about this Bucks supporting cast. That was the concern heading into the season, right? We get Giannis, everything around him, space it out, defenders. Makes sense. Somebody's got to pick up some of the playmaking slack, though. Ryan Rollins is doing that, and I think opening a lot of eyes in the process.
And Dan, and I love stories like this. And you mentioned Ryan Hollins. So he's a UCLA guy, early freshman year. he's doing windmill dunks in the layup line, and I'm like, man, how did you get to jump so high? So he told me he was like a 7-foot high jumper in high school. I'm like, you know, you can play in the league, dude, if you just develop a semblance of an offensive game. And he gets vilified in Milwaukee, justifiably, because he was a big Giannis basher a couple of years ago. But he gets vilified as being a non-talent, but he actually started like 50 to 60 NBA games. And so anytime you can put that on your resume, you're doing something. Ryan Rollins has been able to carve out a niche for himself in a similar fashion. Quentin Jackson, we played against him with the Pacers. He's another DC Go-Go's and Mad Ants. You see that on his resume. Ryan with the Santa Cruz, the G League, with the Herd, with the Go-Go's. And so these guys are really, really, for me, heartwarming stories because – you know, Eddie Gill, the Pacer studio analyst, we did a hit the other day for Stan Verrett and FanDuel Sports. And I looked up his background, and he was just an anonymous JC player in Eastern Utah somewhere. He wound up in the league, playing in the NBA. And so these stories, man, in terms of resilience, and Ryan's run into some difficulties, some issues legally and all that stuff. I'm not going to get into that. But when I see that, and what I saw from him the first day of training camp in Orange County last season, his rookie year, not rookie year, but first year with the Bucks, there was something there, you know, and there was something there. There's a toughness with guys like that. He's not from the mean streets of Detroit. I think he's from the suburbs of Detroit, went to Toledo. But there's a mental toughness, man, that you've got to have to be able to survive in this league.
100%. You know, so often you're talking, I mean, it's the pyramid, right? You start out with there's thousands and thousands and thousands of players, and it just gets harder and harder and harder the closer you get to the top. And I remember I did a feature a few years ago when I was at The Ringer about like the art of sticking around in the NBA. And all these guys that have carved out 10, 15 plus year careers, they were the best player in the, you know, on their high school team, in their town, maybe even in their college conference. And then you get to the league and it's, you need to learn how to fit a role, right? You need to be willing to sublimate some of your game to fit that role. And it's not everybody is wired to do that. And some people obviously are so gifted that they supersede all that. They come in over the top of all of that. But the players who can learn, this is what I got to do to stick. And this is how I'm going to be able to do it. It's got to be about the work. It's got to be about the grind. Very frequently, it's about the defensive end of the court, because that's what's going to get me minutes. It's going to get me opportunities. And then what I can do on top of that, first, it might just be, you're parked in the corner and you're shooting, catch and shoot threes. And that is it. That might be the extent of the role right now. But as the league has evolved, you need to be able to, it's not just 3-and-D anymore. That gets you started. But then it's got to be that 3-and-D plus. It's got to be, can you beat the closeout? Can you drive middle? Can you draw a defender and kick? Can you spray out and create? And I think that's what's exciting about what the Ryan Rollins story has led him to be right now. The player he is right now is somebody who can get to a pull-up, who can beat that closeout, you know, work, come off the high ball screen, get to the elbow, and make something happen for himself or somebody else. That skill set is worth an awful lot to an NBA offense, especially one where, with the Milwaukee Bucks roster as it exists right now, you've got a lot of guys who can finish plays, a lot of catch-and-shoot players, a lot of guys who might be, you know, rollers that can finish inside, but somebody that can kind of connect those parts of the offense, that's worth its weight in gold. And I mean, when you're telling me a guy who can produce that way, you know, be a three level potential scorer while also taking on really tough assignments on the ball on the defensive end of the court, and is cool with falling back and playing a role, fitting a role off of Giannis, getting that guy for what is it, like $12 million over 3 years? Like, that is, you struck gold when you found somebody like that. So obviously it's early days. Ryan Rollins is going to be start to elevate up the scouting reports for opposing defenses. We're going to have to see. He's going to have to adjust. He's going to have to evolve. But I think if you told anybody a month before the season, this is what you were going to see from him in the first 8-12 games, I think you'd have taken that every single day of the week.
And I also think that it's interesting that we probably haven't seen the best version of him. He came off of the offseason with a little bit of a shoulder surgery. So he's coming into these first 8 games, you know, not on the mend per se, but you know, he's recovering from an injury. So we're not seeing his full confidence, his full bag, his full ability. The other thing that really stands out about the guy is the defensive tenacity. But then he has a mental fortitude about him that I think carries over. Last night, the game against Toronto was sort of an aberration. Second leg of a back-to-back, you know, guys are tired. You're not going to see the best version of him. But from what I've seen of him, it makes this, and this is the question I have for you, Dan. What I've seen from him in his eight games is going to give Doc Rivers a major conundrum when Kevin Porter Jr. is ready to come back. Now, when KPJ is ready to come back, Dan, do you think Rollins retains the starting role, or does Doc go back with KPJ? How do you think that shakes out when that time comes?
I mean, I'm of the mind of saying, like, for Doc Rivers, that's one of those good problems, right? Oh, suddenly I have too many guards that I like, right? That I can play more, that I want to find more minutes for. I think, to me, it's the what we've seen in the early kind of chemistry, the rhythm that Ryan Rollins is finding with these other starters, especially with his bigs in the two-man game, that to me feels like you want to let that grow a little bit. And, you know, you don't want to necessarily say that somebody's going to lose their spot due to injury. It's, you know, that's a difficult conversation ought to have with any player. But I think that Kevin Porter Jr. certainly has his place in the league, has a lot of offensive skill, and can be a creator for himself. I think more so for himself than for others, but also certainly has the kind of offensive game where he can get on a heater and he can carry your offense for, you know, stretches at a time. I think in terms of what you're looking to build, the team structure for the build, the roster construction of the Bucks, as it makes the most sense to me. And obviously, you know, I'm not running the team, but the way John Horst put it together here is you want everybody around Giannis to be a 3-and-D-plus kind of player. And I think Kevin Porter Jr. has the skill set and the frame to be able to do that. But I think we've maybe seen a little more in practice that Ryan Rollins can be that on the defensive end as a point of attack guy. And so yeah. I think I might want to lean a little bit more in that direction and see what kind of cohesion we can build out there. To me, if there's a change in the starting lineup, and obviously the roster construction is its own issue there, it might be a little bit more like, are we a little too small with a three guard alignment next to Giannis and Miles Turner? But also you want to get your best five on the floor as often as you can. And we're seeing really strong play early in the season from some of these guards. So I think that's where my head would go. But again, if you're talking about, we started this season saying, are any of these guards, or how many of these guards do you feel really confident about? If you come in a couple weeks into the season and Doc Rivers is saying, I feel pretty good about both of those guys, that's a much better spot to be in than you were just previously.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, Ryan Rollins and Cole Anthony, that combination, and this is cleaning the glass before the Toronto game, but their turnover percentage forced, defensive turnover percentage was like the 97th percentile, 80, 18 point whatever. And the Bucks are 23rd in forced turnovers. My point is, I can see Doc, and I want you guys both to chime in on this, I can see Doc kind of getting into this pairs mindset of liking Cole and Ryan together with that second unit, leaving KPJ and Gary Trent and AJ in that first unit. But then, you know, I'm just not sure. Ryan had the great back-to-back games, 25 and 32, 33 against Golden State. But man, as you guys know, it's hard to sustain. It's impossible almost to sustain that level based on the other guys on the floor. And even the level that he's at, 17, 18, I'm not sure if that's sustainable for him at this point in his career. And John Horst talked about this contract, the $12 million for, what, Dylan, 3 or 4 years, whatever it is, three years, $4 million a year. It's a bridge contract. This is going to be the bridge into his next. And so I just don't know if you want to continue to throw him into that kind of a fire like we're expecting this 18.67 assists. You know, six deflections, three.
But MJ, what do you do when he's out there doing it? And what do you do when you guys are 5-3? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you make sense out of that to say,
well, because let's pull back? Because he had the two back to back career highs, but now he's starting to come back down to earth. And coming back down to earth for him is still great. I mean, it's like 15, 16 points a game, you know, 12 points a game. He's had like, you know, I think all double figure games, but it's been high, 25, 32. It's been 10, 12. You know, I don't know if he's at a place mentally to be able to handle that kind of responsibility. Do you want him to have to shoulder that load at this stage of his career? Or is it better off having a buffer, Dan, like a KPJ that can, you know, you throw in there and then you use Ryan to kind of, you know, get in where he fits in?
I hear that. I mean, I think to me, the question, that's interesting. If you are in the second unit, I guess then he winds up being able to sort of share that shot creation and offensive responsibility with Cole Anthony, also with Bobby Portis as sort of a guy who can be a hub in that second unit offensively.
Kyle Kuzma.
Right. So you got multiple guys that can all create. And so that reduces the pressure. I think the question that I've got, just the other side of it, because you're right, the defensive superpower he's got right now is that kind of havoc wreaking, right? Where you can deflect deflections and steals and, you know, putting pressure on opposing ball handlers.
Yep.
And that might be even more valuable in that starting five where, you know, you want to be able, I mean, obviously Giannis and Miles can play a lot of different ways, but if you are playing, you know, more in a drop, if you've got your bigs back to protect the rim, you need to be impacting the ball on the front end, right? And so, like, if Kevin Porter Jr. comes in and he's saying, like, I see how my bread's buttered here, that I'm going to need to be that kind of, you know, point of attack, first line of defense, and he's adopting some of that as well, then, yeah, maybe that winds up being a solution to your problems. And maybe the rising tide kind of lifts all boats. But I wonder if what Rollins brings defensively is almost more valuable in the first unit than it would be in the second unit. And then where you're looking at the Bucks as it stands right now, top 10 offense, and then, you know, down to the bottom 10 in defensive efficiency so far. And some of that is just going to be, you know, they got, you know, the schedule kind of loss on the back end of the back-to-back against Toronto. But that's where I think the level needs to come up for Toronto is how do you meet, it's been a long day. Is that you got to try to figure out where the stops are coming from, how you're going to be able to get that, you know, initial stop, grab the rebound, be able to push the other way, and how you can get an offense out of its rhythm. That's really where he kind of made his niche so far. So I wonder if that winds up being more valuable with the starters. But yeah, I think the nice takeaway here, if you are a Bucks fan, is you maybe thought you were a little concerned about what the options might look like. And now it looks like there are actually a couple of viable paths forward to some pretty good units of 3-4-5 man groups that you can put out there. And, you know, that with Giannis playing the way that he's playing, that can get you an awful long way in this East.
And what's interesting, Chris, is that, and we talked about this too, is that when Rollins is paired with Cole, Ryan and Cole together, it's almost like Cole is the point guard. Ryan is the off guard offensively. And then defensively, Ryan picks up the point guard pressure, full court, 6'11" arm span, wingspan, deflections, all that. So I mean, it's, and then they've and this is the kind of stuff that means stuff to me that probably means nothing to a whole lot of people, but they've even taken up a nickname for themselves. They call themselves the Step Brothers. You know, both light skinned guys, both kind of, you know, if you kind of glance, you can get them confused on the court. You know, the fact that they've kind of given themselves a moniker, we're the Step Brothers. You know, because of how we play, how we can change the energy. You know what I'm saying, Chris? I mean, so they got that synergy working between them. I kind of like that. So yeah, anyway.
And the last thing on this, we can button this topic up about Rollins as far as like, he still seems a little bit uncomfortable playing the lead guard, point guard position. I mean, let's be real. Like, you know, there are times out there where he runs into some issues out there where, you know, guys with pressure, with making plays, his passing, his lobs, his connection to Giannis hasn't been on point. KPJ is known to have really good chemistry with Giannis as far as a passing perspective. That part of it kind of has bothered me this early part of the season. Like, you know, Giannis has been getting guys, posting guys up and guys behind him. And, you know, Rollins hasn't completed literally one lob pass all year. And it's kind of getting on my nerves. So I don't know if that's what Doc's going to be looking at when he makes the decisions, because Rollins realistically is a combo guard that is thrust into playing the PG. Now, I'm not saying KPJ is terribly, like, too much different than that type of archetype, but when you're 6'6", and you've done what KPJ has done in the league and has that type of confidence, like, take the Knicks and the Warriors game out of it, like, Rollins' confidence has been about a six or seven, in my opinion, other than those two games when he was on 10. Like, I felt like he goes up and down with how he feels about himself, his game. I don't know if that's indicative of, you know, how he's being coached or the leash he's on, but he, you know, I think again, I think when KBJ's ready to play, I think Doc's going to go back to him and bring Rollins back off the bench, in my opinion.
Yeah, how much do you factor in the psychological aspect with a young player like Ryan Rollins, and you're giving him too much too soon? I guess
I think that's a huge consideration. Yeah, and you know, Doc's had fantastic fingertips for how to manage the temperament, the personalities of his players going back, you know, across jobs, right? And so not always, you know, sometimes young players have a hard time kind of breaking through, but when they do, when he shows that confidence in them, you know, the effects can be really, really positive. And so I think the idea of job 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is how do we make it easier for Giannis, right? Giannis is going to be shouldering such a heavy load. So yeah, if to your point, Chris, the idea of somebody who can get him an easier look, can be, you know, has a little bit more chemistry with him on those connected passes, makes a ton of sense to me. If that's the way Doc sees it, you know, wouldn't argue that even a little bit, because whatever maximizes Giannis is good for the ball club. I'm looking at that. That's kind of why I'm looking at it on the defensive end, thinking about Rollins at the point of attack, because anything that makes it easier on those backline guys helps the ball club in that way too. But I hear what you're saying. And then to your point, Marcus, like the idea of if there's a comfort level with Cole and Ryan together, and they've already developed some of that synergy and some of the, you know, that sort of positive feeling where like we are going out there as a unit, I think leaning into that can have really positive effects for the whole overall team, because it's not just how do we make our best starting five. You also need that second unit to develop an identity, to develop cohesion as well. So I think that point makes a ton of sense.
And so this leads us to our next topic here. I mean, the second unit, man, you know, and it's funny because Kyle Korver has asserted himself. He's averaging
Kuzma. 6, 7,
yeah. Excuse me, Kyle Kuzma. Here I'm doing.
Hey,
like
Korver can be assertive too. I just am not sure where he's at, but he can be assertive too.
Been a long trip. A lot of late nights recently in Toronto and in Indiana. But no, Kyle Kuzma. And I say that if I had a nickel for every time I say that, I'd be rich right now. But Kyle Kuzma is starting to assert himself in a lot of different ways, a lot of good ways on the second unit. The guy that is it's interesting watching Bobby Portis trying to get comfortable with this new style of play hasn't been as seamless as we had hoped it would be. Off the bat, still a lot of time left. We had Zach Lowe. I was going to say Zach Harper. Zach Lowe on the show recently, and he talked about he's not worried about Bobby. Bobby's going to figure it out. Bobby's going to be Bobby, get his 14, 15 points, 7, 8 rebounds a game. But right now, I mean, even though his 3-point field goal percentage went above 40 heading into the Raptor game, struggled with it with his outside shot against the Raptors. But, you know, I mean, that second unit, to your point, Dan, I mean, you know, you want them – You got to maximize that second unit, and can you do that without Bobby Portis playing at Bobby Portis type levels?
I think that is that's a tall task because he's been such a consistent producer where you kind of know what you're getting from him, whether it's him in that pick and pop facing up or him being able to take a guy down into the post and go to work down there, like attacking the offensive glass. There's so many ways he contributes for you on the offensive end. And yeah, the Raptors game, it seemed like he was just a little bit off rhythm the entire night. Like he's getting some really clean looks in the pick and pop, or when the ball is swing, he's getting it in the corner. And he's like a little, pulling the string a little bit or a little bit off on the jumper. And that makes it a lot more difficult for everything else to flow. When he's in that rhythm and he's getting a couple of those pick and pops to go, everything else opens up for him, the pump and go and the way he can operate on the inside. I do think he's obviously a pretty huge key for what that second unit needs to look like and the way it can, you know, you're trying to score enough to win or at least play even in those non-Giannis minutes. And he's a huge part of that. I tend to agree with Zach, whichever Zach it was, I tend to agree with that Zach, that the track record is, it leads you to believe that they're to want to give him a little bit more runway to figure it out. But I do like, and I think that one of the positives is there was maybe some question about what Kyle Kuzma we would see at the early part of this season, really struggled after the trade deadline and in the role that he was kind of where he's expected to be like the big addition. And also taking over for Chris Middleton in that spot, that is a really tall task to have to shoulder. And so now it was like, well, he's been a star. He's been somebody who has been a primary, offensive option in Washington, obviously not on great teams, but he shouldered a large offensive load there, came in, was playing big minutes, taking a lot of shots. How is he going to adjust to a reserve role? And I think the answer you've seen is really comfortably, like an idea of where we strip out a little bit of what you need to be and say, you are able to, you're really smart cutting off the ball. He was timing up his cuts against the Raptors really, really well, where once the ball handler's coming off the ball screen, he's in that slot. He's making that cut as the guy comes into the rim, giving him a target, getting down into the dunker spot, being available. And when you see that, you're like, oh, right, that guy's huge and athletic. And if he makes himself a threat down in the paint, there's options there. There's something you, it doesn't have to just be, I need to Paul George it 25 feet away and start trying to get into my bag and create. There's a lot of ways you can impact the game. Getting out in transition, grab and go, run the wing. Like, there's a lot of ways for him to impact the game. And he seems really comfortable doing that. Ideally, you get that version with Bobby Portis making shots. And then I think you have to love what you've seen from Cole Anthony, the command he's playing with. He's also, Cole Anthony's a really cool rebounder. He rebounds like he's mad. He's like, I got to go get that ball. And then I'm pushing.
So much attitude in his boards.
Oh, he's got a chip. I said it the other night. He's got this. He's got this. This New York kind of. Where is he from? What high school again? It's
Malloy, Archbishop Malloy.
Archbishop Malloy, Brian Winters, Kevin Joyce, all these greats that there were my era. But he's got this Archbishop Malloy kind of chip on his shoulder that he plays with, man. You know, he's out there in slam dunk contests in Timberlands, choking the butters up. So anybody that's trying to dunk in some Timber, you know what I mean? He's just a different type of dude, man. He's a good dude to be around, man. Good energy.
So all that to say, I think there's a lot of offensive talent in that second unit, and it's just going to be up to those guys developing that chemistry, getting into that rhythm individually and together. But I think that the ceiling for that group is it can be really high, and I think that's something you got to be really excited about. It's been such a difficult time so often over the years, being able to find the right match and the right rhythm when Giannis is off the floor. Because you know you're going to be a bear when he's out there to be able to control it. But you're only going to run him but so much. You're not going to run him 38, 40 minutes a night. You got to be able to stay tethered in those minutes when he's off there. I like the skill sets and the talent you've got in the second unit now. It's going to be about developing some chemistry with a lot of new pieces.
Chris, I want your insight on this too. With Bobby Portis, I mean, what are you seeing in terms of his early season challenges, trying to find the flow and the rhythm? Is it Kuz asserting himself that's been an adjustment for him? What are you seeing out there?
You know, when he's running in that second unit with Kuz, and Kuz is kind of doing his Kuz thing, whether it be pushing or aggressive offensively or taking it, you know, when that's typically Bobby's kind of role, hey, we're going to post up three times in a row, get Bobby on this right block, let him go to work. Now that's an adjustment process, in my opinion, for Bobby to figure out the ebbs and flows of now this new dynamic with Kuz, and it's a new dynamic with Miles Turner. Like Miles, you know, despite not having the greatest start, he's still like a plus 10 net or something with the Bucks. Yeah. Him and Giannis are really good on the court together. So we haven't even seen the best version of Miles Turner, but I do think that the assertiveness of Kuz with his new role playing this kind of guy that isn't just shooting the long jumpers and Paul George in it 25 feet from the basket. It's creating some space issues now, because now Kuz is going into those spaces and those areas where Bobby typically is wandering. And as a hooper on the professional level, you got to figure out how to play off of that. So now it's like popping off of Kuz, watching Kuz cut. Now I got a space. And I think that's going to take a little time. Bucks fans are, you know, their leash is kind of short when it comes to Bobby for some reason. His performance earlier in this season, I'm going to stick with Bobby. I believe in Bobby. I believe in his contributions. I just think that this entire process has to take a little bit of time, especially to the defensive side of things. Like this year, Doc wanted them to play a lot more of an aggressive style. Bobby wasn't used to that. So now that he's able to kind of do that now and play this aggressive style, again, this is 7 games in the season, I think by, you know, game 20, 25, we'll see a much different Bobby Portis.
Yeah. So now, going to wrap it up with us. Dan, appreciate you being on here. But so now I'm chilling out at my apartment doing some printing that I shouldn't be doing. I'm on the printer. You know, I kind of sneak down there before office hours.
Why shouldn't you be printing?
It's a long story. But anyway, so I like to get there before the office opens up and get my, crank out. I tell them I'm going to print like a couple of pages. I want to print
like 100.
20, 25 pages. I bring my own paper though. But anyway, so I'm down there like about 7:30. This dude that I really respect his basketball opinion. He's got this beautiful Rottweiler. Kobe is his name, named after Kobe Bryant. So he brings in Kobe into the foyer, the lobby area. I'm behind the desk. Kobe comes up, wants me to give him one of the dog biscuits and all that. I give him the dog biscuit. I love Rottweilers. And so we're talking about basketball, is my point. And he makes the point, and here's where I want to go with this, is that the Bucks are one piece away. One piece away. How do you feel about that, guys? One piece away. Do you think, and I'm saying this in the context of Giannis and making sure that Giannis feels like the Bucks are doing everything within their power to you know, compete with the Eastern Conference being down and the injuries and blah, blah, all that. I mean, do you think that that's something? And, you know, I know John Horst and his crew, they're always actively looking to make the team better. We know that. But how imperative do you think it is for this team to make another addition? Or do you think the way it is, KPJ coming back, that Giannis can be happy with what's going on with the unit as it stands right now?
You want to take it first, Chris?
No, Dan, you got it, baby.
That's on you, Dan. That's on you, Yahoo.
That's how you know I'm nervous about answering.
You're the Yahoo NBA basketball writer. We want your opinion on this, man.
You want Dan Devine, baby.
So here, okay. I think anybody, and Giannis included, would have to look at what the Bucks front office has done over the course of the last half decade and say, these guys are going all in every time there's an opportunity to do it, right? Mm. And Giannis, of course, has played his role in that discussion and comments to one person here or one outlet there and different things and saying, like, this is what the timeline is and this is what I expect to be able to compete. Every time one of those deadlines has approached, there's a, you know, a Drew Holiday trade. There was the attempted Bogdan Bogdanovic trade that got rescinded. Or, you know, but we're going to go gangbusters. That's what we're doing. Wow. All right, you've shown me that you're committed to me. I will commit to you. All right, we win the championship. We're falling back a little bit. All right, I need you to show me you're committed to me. And then it's Damian Lillard. All right, that doesn't work out quite the way anybody anticipated. I kind of want you to show me that you're committed to me. We will eat $113 million of Damian Lillard's contract to go out and get Miles Turner. All right. And draft picks, as they come in, they go out when they need to, because we are expending every asset, every resource available to us to put the best present tense team together that we can. Because when we're talking about timelines, the timeline that matters is the one that has Giannis Antetokounmpo in it. And the roster of the Bucks that matters is the one that has Giannis Antetokounmpo on it. And they have operated as if that is the case. All of which is to say, there's not a whole lot left in the cupboard right now available to be able to go make big moves that I can see, at least. I know, you know, you look at the chessboard, it's only a couple weeks into the season. And, you know, there are certain stars that are starting to get disgruntled. There are certain situations that are not off to the starts that everybody had hoped for them. More will be revealed as far as who would wind up even being on the chessboard potentially by the time you get to December 15th or then further toward February. But I think John Horst in this front office has shown a capacity to get creative in ways that I think other people might not even think were possible, and maybe an appetite for risk that not every organization would have in trying to make whatever that addition is. I'm a little bit reluctant to say at one piece away, because I think outside of Oklahoma City, I don't know that anybody is a complete team right now. I think everybody can look at themselves and say, we are, you know, if we had one more thing here or one more thing there, we'd be right in there. But even as it stands, you know, Cleveland's not running away with the East. The Knicks, you just saw the Knicks, and, you know, Giannis certainly showed how he felt about the Knicks. You know, there's nobody running away with this conference. So get healthy, get some rhythm, get a little bit more opportunity for these guys to cohere together. I think you maybe look up in, 15, 20 games, and you say, what do we think we've got here? I think it's a little early to say they're one piece short, but especially because I think you could even be one piece short, and if the matchups work out right, you could still wind up in the Eastern Conference Finals in this conference as it stands right now.
Yikes.
So now, your great piece in terms of the Bucks preview, Dan's big question. So where are we? How long before that question gets a semblance of an answer? How long do we wait before that question starts to be answered?
Now, all right. So to me, I mean, again, if I'm make the decision makers here in Milwaukee, there's no other decision to make. Like we are going, you know, full bore, 100 miles per hour, everything we can do to build this team around Giannis Antetokounmpo, because if he's not here, it might be an awfully long time before you see anybody like that in this uniform again. Not just because of, you know, any small market concerns or whatever, but because they didn't make a whole lot of dudes like that, right? Like, it's, so while you've got one of them, you do everything you can. You burn the boats. You empty out the cupboards. You do everything you can around that guy. So to me, if I'm the decision makers, I'm waiting as long as I possibly can. Giannis has said so far, he's committed through the end of this season. He's like, if I change my mind in 6-7 months, we'll see. But I am all in on this team. 6-7. I know, I saw that. I got an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old. I see you, Chris.
I'm 6-7 myself, but go ahead.
but that you see, like, he's locked in for this season. And he's certainly playing like somebody who's like, I'm locked in and I got something to prove, right? And if he changes his mind at any point before February 6th, then you reassess. But for me, if I'm a Bucks decision maker, I'm waiting as long as I possibly can, because the best version of this team is one that's got that guy on it.
And based on this current iteration, and I know it's early. It's way too early to make any kind of, you know, profound pronouncements about. But the style of play, I mean, the 3-point attempts are up about 3 a game, and that's what Giannis is still not taking for me enough so far. I mean, do you feel like, I mean, what's your take? It's heading in the right direction. This is what you have to do. They're playing a style of play that can be conducive to making some noise if these pieces all come together. Bobby plays better. Miles plays better. KPJ comes back and gives them that infusion of KPJ-ish, connected, frenetic energy. I mean, just your take on it. Your big question was, can Milwaukee craft a new framework for contention? Are we doing that? Are we crafting a framework for contention around Giannis?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously if there was a way to get both Miles Turner and a star caliber lead guard, that, you know, that's the best of both worlds. But the world that you live in order to get one, you had to sort of move on from the other. And the other one was not going to be available to you because of injury anyway. So everybody, you know, John Horst in that front office making the decisions that they can in the context that they've got to make them. And so to me, I look at it and I say, you are a top 10 offense right off the rip. I think they're 8th entering today in points scored per possession. So you're right on track there with Giannis balling out and with Miles, you know, getting on board and Bobby getting on board. So even without these guys in there at their, you know, the peak of their powers, you're still, you know, top 8, top 7 offense. The defense is where my concern more lies, because I think we've seen that in the past. Like, if you don't have the point of attack defenders, it's going to be all of a sudden you're allowing dribble penetration, you're collapsing on the defense, and, you know, their spray outs and it's open 3-pointers. We saw a lot of that against Toronto. Again, second night of a back-to-back after going down to the final possession in Indiana. So, you know, you give a little bit of grace there. But I think entering today 22nd in defensive efficiency, 20th in defensive rebounding rate, you'd like to see that come up. When you built so much of the team around Giannis and Miles Turner, and foul on everybody, 26th in opponent free throw attempt rate. So those normalize a little bit. You get a little bit back toward the center, toward middle of the pack there. That offense kind of keeps humming. That, to me, you know, if you're talking about a top 10 offense and a middle of the pack defense, you are talking about a mid to high 40s win team, which in the East might get you the 3 seed. Who knows? And so if at that point you are, it's matchups, right? So, and again, we've, at the risk of oversimplifying, what has been the bugaboo, the issue that has waylaid the Bucks in the postseason the last couple of years? It's health. They have not had their roster on the floor at the most important times of the year against these opponents that they're facing in the first round. So if you get, I mean, it's a pretty simple analysis, but it also happens to be correct. You get Giannis on the floor, healthy and operational, with guys who can defend and knock down threes that he creates, you got an awfully good chance. You got a puncher chance against anybody. And absolutely. So to me, I think that's the situation. I like the structure of the offense. I like the structure of the guys that are putting around him. I like starting AJ Green. I think that AJ and Gary Trent Jr. together, it just spaces out the floor more, and Giannis is absolutely feasting on it. You tighten up the defensive screws. You get a couple of those other guys, you know, finding their level on the offensive end. And I think you got a good shot against damn near anybody, because 34 is that special.
Man, appreciate you, man. And so we got to get you back, like, you know, a few games in. We can do another kind of evaluation of where this team is. And
sure,
it's a fantastic voyage. And again, the main thing is just making sure Giannis feels like we're headed in the right direction. And so far, I think so good. But, you know, 6-7 months from now, who knows? Man, have a great day. We appreciate you. And we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot, Dan Devine. Thank you so much for joining the Here District.
Guys, thanks so much for having me. An absolute pleasure.